Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick. It's time for this week's Friday morning GM, a very busy, not even quite opening of the league year, which we're still a few hours away from recording this at noon. Joining me is guest host Matt Ruff as Vas Larikos continues to open his restaurant very successfully, by the way. Really wonderful restaurant, but I'll let him tell you a little bit more about it, and we'll talk about the experience a little bit more when he's back on the show for in the coming weeks. But Matt, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. What a fun time of year. Can't wait to get into it.
All right, so Ravens had a flurry of news, three signings, five players lost so far as I counted. I'm not sure if there may have been, there may be more information by the time we're gone. But remember, this is about noon on Wednesday. We're recording this a little bit earlier than normal for a Friday morning GM. The big news, of course, was this week, the Ronnie Stanley re-signing. We talked about that in a separate show, so I'm not going to go deep into it with Matt here, but I do want to get his thoughts on this. Seems like the dollars were right relative to the market.
Yeah, I think it was maybe a couple bucks more than I was hoping we would pay. But when you look at the relative contracts that were given out to Dan Moore, the backup left tackle from San Francisco, I can't quite remember his name, among others. It seems like, Jalen Moore. It seems like we got a pretty good deal, all things considered. I do think, you know, as we discussed, if he had gone on the open market, you probably could have seen offers of $25 million AAV, maybe 25 and a half plus. So ultimately, I think Ronnie wants to stay with us. We wanted Ronnie, got the deal done, and at least we can say that's checked off our list of things to do. So now we got to get to the rest of the roster, right?
Yeah, I do consider it a hometown discount. I think the deal, the big thing for me is the deal still has a very large range of outcomes. We think Ronnie Stanley gave the Ravens a very reasonable spot to land on at 3 years, $20 million relative to the rest of the market. I think very reasonable. But if he plays poorly or regresses in terms of play or gets hurt, it will not be a good deal for the Ravens. It's a lot of money at risk. And that's somewhat in contrast to the next guy I'd like to talk about, which is Patrick Ricard, where I think because he's a low-risk signing, there's actually a fairly narrow range of outcomes.
Yeah, very excited about bringing Patrick Ricard on the vet discount deal, the vet minimum discount deal, where we basically have him count roughly 1.4, 1.5 million against the cap, but we actually pay him maybe slightly less than double that. So really excited to have him back. Think he fits the team. And, you know, if we win a championship, you want to do it with him. And it's nice to do it with someone who doesn't break the bank. So really happy to have Ricard back. I will say I would like to get younger at that position. He's had issues with the hips. Hips are very dangerous for people who continually have, you know, head-on-head collisions in the hole as you're, you know, going through on a run here. So would like to get a bit younger, but understand that bringing back Patrick Ricard's a great signing. So I'm very happy. Maybe we have someone we carry on the practice squad this year who was a defensive line at a small school. Maybe he was just too small to transition over. And over the course of the year, sitting on the practice squad, maybe it's something that he could learn and ultimately transition to into the new year. So opportunity there, but happy to have Ricard back.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% across the board there. It fits the Ravens very well. I don't think the Juszczyk signing really had anything to do with Ricard. I think their plan was to sign Ricard the whole time. But another team like the Chargers or whatever, I mean, it's conceivable that they didn't go out and try and buy Ricard from the Ravens because of the presence of Juice. But I honestly believe it was Ricard the whole time in this case. The one disappointing thing and the ripple impact of the Ricard signing is that they used 100% of the qualified veteran money, it appears, on the Ricard signing. And as I understand it, you can have up to two qualified veteran signings, and those contracts have to be with players who have been with the team for at least 4 years. There's only a couple of players who really fit the description, with Tylan Wallace being the other major one. Malik Harrison would have been a third, but he, of course, signed with the Steelers. We'll get to that a little later. But the fact that they used all of the money on Ricard means one of two things with regard to Wallace. Either they think Wallace is going to get a better offer than would be attractive, given a few extra veteran benefit dollars, qualified veteran dollars, rather, or they believe that they need Ricard more than they need Wallace. And I think this greatly reduces the chance of retaining Wallace. And I really still hope they do. I think he fits very much into what the Ravens have in their wide receiver core.
Agreed. I think that means Wallace is gone. I had kind of thought that all along Wallace was going to get a better look at a couple more dollars than we would realistically want to give him, especially on the veteran benefit deal. The receiver salaries, as predicted, are kind of all over the place, where you have the guys who are in their, you know, maybe call it 25 to 27 age season, getting pretty big deals, where you have some of the guys who are really becoming more of those older vets, like Hopkins, for example, getting a bit less. But even when you see someone like, you know, Darius Slayton getting, you know, 3 years, $36 million or 12 per year, right? You know, it's the deals that are coming out are very, very big deals. I mean, Josh Palmer got 3 for $36 million. Now, I'm not saying they're exact comparisons for Wallace, right? It's hard to exactly compare. Wallace does a lot in run blocking. He plays on special teams and such. But, you know, the wide receivers are certainly getting paid. And I think Wallace might fall more into like the $4 million a year range, if I had to guess, which is, you know, just, you know, it's significantly more than you would get on that $2.5 to $2.9 million vet benefit deal.
Right. And that unfortunately is exactly the case. And it's a tough sign. Let's talk about DeAndre Hopkins, because he's obviously the one people are most excited about after Stanley, I think, in terms of a signing. He'll be 33 in June, $5 million with incentives that could take him to about $6 million, as I understand it. I like the reasonable price, and I think we need a scale for this. But in terms of the Odell Beckham contract, this was 278 mil of Beckham's, which is not too much to pay for a wide receiver effectively that you're going to have for 1 year. And it should be a good target for Lamar.
Yeah, Ken, I think the Odell Beckham news, when they signed him a couple years ago, I was actually in shock when I text come. I was to leave. I love the hire. He'll be about 33 years old. So looking forward to having him join the team. I think this is one of those, I think we can make Lamar happy deals. He had a high 70s PFF grade, still makes some difficult, tough catches. So happy to have DeAndre in the fold. I think he's probably a third receiver on the outside that you can rotate in for Bateman and Flowers. And if you have a situation where Bateman and Flowers go out, that Hopkins can step in, you know, at the X position. So certainly happy to have Hopkins back in the fold here.
Yeah, there seems to be a notion that Hopkins would be good in the slot. I mean, I'm sure he'd be something in the slot. I don't think he makes a lot of sense for the Ravens. They have, you know, big slots as tight ends, Isaiah Likely or Andrews, who represent bigger targets, more comfortable probably in the tighter spaces, more able to naturally find that space in zone. I think Hopkins is a guy who has still a great route runner at 33, and Beckham was too, for that matter, needs the space budget of the X receiver. So he wants to have that open, often wide side of the field where he's alone on that side against a corner. And what that allows him to do is come up to the top of the stem, make a move that loses a corner at that point, and that can then create space. And Lamar does not take great advantage of that because he's not an on-schedule thrower. But if he can create space that is then persistent, and Bateman, you know, broke out last year in terms of what he accomplished with Lamar. But if he can make some persistent space that either goes back towards the middle of the field or creates some vertical routes, separation, then he'll be very effective for the Ravens. So hopefully that's what they use him for. I don't think he's a very natural slot receiver, but I love what you mentioned, the fresh legs in the offense, creating that rotational value. And the Saints really went with this strategy a few years ago. They had the same guys, or sorry, they had, you know, five changes of eligible receiver on a lot of plays where they would keep their offensive lineman, keep their quarterback, but the other five players were moving parts that would be on and off the field. And that can be very annoying to a defensive player on a long drive to have fresh legs coming in all the time.
Yeah, when I think of Hopkins, right, at my mind immediately goes back to the Cleveland Browns game where Zay took a knee in the back, right? Could that have been a play where we had rotated out, you know, him out a little bit more? So I'm a big fan of rotation. I get that it doesn't always work on the offensive line, right? Even though the Ravens have tried to do it in recent years at certain positions, but I like getting fresh people on the field. I like keeping people involved. And I also like not having to run all of the burden through Bateman, all of the burden through Zay, right? The more players you can rotate around, the better. And hopefully, because the Ravens want to be playing at the end of the year, you want to have as many of your guys fresh. We need to be able to use all of the running backs on the roster, all the receivers on the roster, and really try to keep that rotation going. What do you think? Can maybe 475 yards for Hopkins, maybe 500?
That's not completely unreasonable. I think the over under actually be a little lower than that, but that's probably, you know, one offered by Vegas. I think if someone said 500 right now, I'd probably take the under. I think the Ravens just don't use the passing game as much. And all receivers are made unhappy here in the end, because it's very critical to their own dollars earned in the NFL to have lots of opportunity, lots of catches, lots of chances. And it's a volume business if you play wide receiver. The Ravens cannot ever have, with Lamar Jackson, one receiver who they force targets to. It's completely counterproductive to what this offense is good at, which is misdirection, and the ball could go to anyone. And Lamar is always the biggest threat on the field and has to be accounted for exceptionally. And you have extended plays. By the way, extended plays, really an area where I want Hopkins to shine. It is an area where Aguilar did very well. And it's Hopkins as the replacement for Aguilar really needs to provide some of that value to the Ravens when he's on the field as well. I did want to talk also about Wallace, though, because I think two players are impacted by the Hopkins signing probably more than others. And one is Wallace, maybe even more by the Ricard signing, is impacted and less likely to sign back with the Ravens. Or it could just be an indication that the Ravens know that he's worth, you know, $4 million a year for 2 years kind of thing, too. But Wallace is the Ravens' best run blocker, and he fits entirely with the fresh legs theme of this offense. Get him on the field on early downs, on downs where you might run the football. Very dangerous receiver, and he's proven that last year, but also the Ravens' best run blocker at wide receiver by far. Really need to see that kind of commitment to run blocking from DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, I would agree. Would love to see it. I think that if you want to win, your will to run block is higher. If you're on a team where, you know, you're sitting in Tennessee for the year and you're just trying to add your stats up so that you can get your next deal, your will to run block goes down significantly. So I hope that, you know, Lamar, Hopkins, Henry, I mean, that's a pretty elite trio, not necessarily in the year for the year, but of names in the NFL and players who have been in the NFL that I think that their mutual respect for each other will, you know, kind of carry through and, you know, maybe get you to do some of the small things that maybe you didn't want to always do.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, you look to your coaches to do that too. You look to Lewis specifically to be the kind of coach who can make run blocking a central focus of the wide receiver group. It could also be Monken, who has a hand in that, but he's not as close to those players. And, you know, Lewis is. In the case of Hopkins, he is a veteran, and there could be three levels to this. Number one is Hopkins doesn't really pick up on the run blocking. Maybe doesn't go full Deontay Johnson on us in terms of divvying out and needing to be run out of town on a rail, but, you know, tries to handle his receiving component, does that as well as he can, puts in a, hand wavy kind of effort as a run blocker. And that won't work for the Ravens, I don't think. The second level is he takes on the run blocking himself. and has a plus season as a run blocker, I think they'd be very positive. The third one, and this is the one you really aspire to, is DeAndre Hopkins is supposed to be a leader. Teach those other freaking wide receivers, you know, to give out maximum effort, or at least lead by example and put out maximum effort. So a player like Bateman and other players who will be on the field, whoever they may be, whether it's Tez Walker or Wallace, again, I don't think he really has a problem with it, will do their utmost to run block. And I understand there are limitations to players like Zay Flowers in terms of just how much they can contribute there, but Hopkins' leadership would be very important.
For sure.
All right. So we talked about the signings. Let's talk about the losses. So far, we think there have been five. It's possible one has been missed because there's so much activity going on at a very fast rate here. The biggest and first was Brandon Stevens going to the Jets, three years, $36 million. It was expected that he was leave. Had no clue that he would make that kind of money. It is a good contract for him and potentially quite good comp value for the Ravens.
Yeah, for sure. Very, very excited to see him get that big deal from a different team for our comp pick stake. Also for him personally, I think that there's no way the Ravens would have ever done this deal. Stevens has some talent. I mean, he sticks to a receiver like some of the best corners in the league, but just gets picked on. It's almost like sometimes he's playing without a head. You know what I mean? He can't get that around. He doesn't know when to get his hands up at the last minute. So to me, this was one of the deals where I was absolutely floored with the compensation. And, you know, I've heard some people say that if you're spending premium dollars on mediocre players in the first few days of free agency, it's a pretty good sign that your team is not going to be very good and certainly hasn't been very good.
Yeah, well, you know they haven't been very good because they've got a lot of cap space. But yeah, that's exactly true. And, you know, this goes hand in hand with what I always say about the Ravens' homegrown talent basis here is that, you know, they have to make heartbreaking decisions about a number of players. And there's some more coming up with players like Andrews and potentially Linderbaum as well in terms of keeping them in a Ravens uniform long term. Travis Jones might be a guy they cannot figure out how to get signed, which is terrible. But the flip side of that is a lot worse. If you're the team who can't ever draft a guy on his first contract and you're always paying Patrick McCary 3 for $37.5 million or Brandon Stevens 3 for $36 million, that's a much worse place to be if you can't draft your own talent. So Stevens, you mentioned the head on a swivel part. It's probably about as big a limiting factor as there can be for a cornerback. Cornerbacks all are within a very narrow range in terms of speed. They do have differing level of instincts. Some are zone corners, some are man corners, some are press corners, some are off corners. But whatever your talent is, if you can't get your head around in man coverage, it's probably the biggest limitation because there's too many things that receiver can do to you to improve his chances to get the football. And there's too many things the quarterback can take advantage in terms of the back shoulder throws and whatnot that make it difficult. So Stevens wasn't a guy who was beat regularly deep. He was a guy who consistently got beat on comebacks and back shoulders and some in-cutting moves as well. But he was typically pretty close to the football, as you mentioned, pretty close to the receiver. It's just a matter of if you can't find the ball, it's not really helping. And obviously had some key penalties. One was a complete crap call that lost the Las Vegas game. But, Stevens gets another chance to get it right. But he's honestly, I think he's going to have to get that right or he probably is going to finish his career at safety.
Yeah, I think maybe some different coaching could potentially help him. You know, I'd like to think that the Ravens have pretty good coaching, but, you know, maybe you just need something completely different. You need to hear it differently, show it differently. You need to be moved around differently. There's got to be something there. I mean, he has so much talent. But like you said, Ken, that limiting factor is such a gigantic limiting factor that you almost just start getting abused. And, you know, I think maybe sometimes the criticism was a little heavy on Stevens, but, you know, I would say that my watching of him, especially throughout this past year, in the first few games, he would give up a catch and I'd say to my friend, wow, he had really tight coverage, you know, bad luck, right? And then we kept saying that. And then it's like, wow, this is just becoming more and more and more. And then you got to the point where you really started to feel like he was a liability. So, you know, I don't know exactly how that tracked each game throughout the year, but just my general sentiment was he was getting more and more exposed. So I think this is a pretty big investment for the Jets to make here, but I'd love to see if their coaching can tune them up and somehow get more of the 2023 version.
Yeah, and that, I don't think that should bother the Ravens if it were to happen. I wanted to see about his contested catches and how many he allowed this year. I don't have access to that really quickly here, so I'm going to have to pass up. But I would bet that he wasn't a good contested catch corner. He did – his technique was to basically go for the ball as it got to the hands. So receivers who are slow to put their hands up, who are conserve their ability to do that until the last moment, had advantages against him. Pickens actually is pretty good at that. You know, you won't hear me say a lot of nice things about Pickens, but that was an area where he was very good. All right, let's move on. Patrick McCary, approximately the same. I think it was 3 for 37.5 to the Jaguars. Priced completely out of the Ravens' range, as much as they love his versatility. Again, this is a kind of sad, heartbreaking decision you have to make sometimes with a player who's very versatile and helps you in some significant ways.
Yeah, sad to see McCary go. He was very technically sound this year, had an issue with the penalties that he really cleaned up, which was nice to see. Always had some issue with them lacking a little bit of beef at that position, being next to Linderbaum, who's also a little bit smaller. So I would like to see if they can get a better fit in at left guard, whether that's Voorhees taking the next step, maybe Voorhees reshaping his body a little bit. Obviously, in the past offseason, he had that injury to get back from. Hopefully he's, trying to put on a little bit of mass, a little bit of size, although maybe his body type doesn't fully lend to that. But there's no way you can give McCary that kind of money. We just don't have it. We have too many good players to sign. So wish him the best of luck in Jacksonville. I think maybe he found his position at left guard. Yeah. I'm not sure if as he ages, if I'm really going to be putting him at left tackle or even right tackle. So I think he'd probably have the most success if he stays at left guard, limits those penalties. And the Jags probably got a pretty good player if you can do that, although certainly not something the Ravens would be able to afford.
Right. I agree on all points. I think if he's at left guard starting, he is that rare guy that you can move around and you can move to tackle. If you have, if you have a tackle or even two tackles go down, you can move to tackle and try and get by with. I think he does potentially give you the most value at guard. He just had his best year playing left guard. I scored him as about a B for the entire season at guard. He had a bad start at tackle, but at guard he was quite solid for the year. And the penalties were obviously, front and center, but they're also a very large portion of his deductions. He had fewer, much lower missed block rate than say Falele, but that's a very low bar, or even than Linderbaum, which is unusual because centers don't usually have a whole lot of missed blocks, but I believe he had a lower missed block rate, and I'd have to go back and confirm that. But the one thing that it hurts is the Ravens' continuity on the offensive line was the best in the entire NFL last year. There's a stat put out by Aaron Schatz, which has a 51-point scale where there's 17 points in each of three things, and it's like most consecutive games played with the same offensive line starters, most games total played with the primary offensive group, I think it is, with the primary five. And there's something else about total games missed or something else. It's also a 17-point scale. But anyway, the Ravens were tops and by a wide margin last year in that category. So the healthy offensive line really was never in question. But the one problem they had was Voorhees getting injured early. And when that happened, they moved McCary from right tackle to left guard, right tackle where he'd been rotating with Rosengarten, gave the full-time job to Rosengarten. That was really the only change they made the entire year. It was a very clean year, and that kind of one-for-one changeability where you don't have to make broad sweeping changes, function of the Ravens' health in part, but also a function of Patrick McCary as a guy you can plug in at any one of five positions.
Yeah, that's a good point on the versatility, and you can't count on the same health on the offensive line that you had mm-hmm. last year. Sometimes you have a couple bad years and a couple good years, right? We've seen that with the Ravens. We saw that with the O's. Hopefully the O's aren't in a bad string of bad health after, last year wasn't very good, but before that was pretty good. But yeah, I think McCary's, he's got a lot of value, and for someone like him, I think he was undrafted or maybe at the very bottom of the draft to come in and be able to to turn this into some serious financial future. I mean, he had what, a 3-year, $18 million deal with the Ravens. And then now this 3 for 37, even if he only ends up getting 25 of this deal, you know, you really did well from your family coming where he started from. And, you know, he had back injuries in college. So, you know, I had back injuries. I've had some surgeries and such. So the fact that he's made able to do this is actually pretty incredible. And would like to see him paired next to a center that's a little bit beefier, you know, and used appropriately. I think the Jags got a good player. I think a lot of times the Jags throw good money at bad, but I think this could actually be pretty decent for him. And I think McCary's got some wisdom now that he's been in the league for a while. He's played around a lot of good, talented players. So should be a good addition for the Jags.
I'm not sure what the front office connection is between the Jags and the Ravens, but the Jacksonville has become Baltimore South. The Chargers are Baltimore West and the Jets are Baltimore North. In terms of the outflow of players, it seems to be a very common theme to what's going on. Maybe the Seahawks will be the next organization that really embraces a lot of the Ravens castoffs. I like it from a PR view of how well the Ravens draft and how I don't like it from the standpoint of there's four GMs continually hawking your practice squad. I really do not like that. So,
yeah, it's very scary.
Yeah. Let's move on. We'll talk about Josh Jones. This is a very significant loss. So they lost McCary. That's one backup tackle gone. They lost Josh Jones to the Seahawks. He's going to make somewhere between $4 and $5 million. I think it's an offer the Ravens could have matched if they wanted to. They didn't do it. It's not ideal to lose Josh Jones because the Ravens now need to go out to the open market and find a guy. I do have one in mind, by the way, that Justin School, who played in Tampa Bay this year, might be a guy that would be a reasonable backup offensive tackle. They'll probably draft one, and I think they probably need to go into the year with four guys. And I would greatly prefer if Fa'alele is not their fourth offensive tackle.
That's a good point, Ken. My question for you here is, with the loss of Jones, right, I think they just – you know, that four, maybe it was $4.75 million. They couldn't figure out a way to get it under the cap, especially it seems like they might be having a hard time trading Andrews. So they might have to decide if they want to keep him or just cut him. Maybe they don't think cutting him provides the value. So giving something like that to Jones is just a bridge too far. My question for you, Ken, this is, I guess, related to Josh Jones, is if we don't get, say we get maybe a veteran guard in free agency to help, you know, supplement what we have on the inside, but we haven't gotten anything from a tackle perspective. What is the round in which you would like to see a tackle taken? Obviously, it depends on need, who falls, and everything, but where would you be comfortable knowing that we have our two starters set, but that we're pretty much gutted completely outside of the Fa'alele option after that?
Okay, so that's a great question, and I think that the Ravens have greatly eased the answer to that with the Stanley signing. I don't think they have to draft an offensive tackle in round one, and yet I don't think it would be a bad thing if they did. If they did, that player, we presume he would be a starter almost immediately. He would probably start, as Jonathan Ogden did, at one of the guard spots. So maybe he starts at left guard if that works physically. Maybe he plays time rotationally at either of the guard spots. Certainly he's the first guy up in terms of an injury. So, you know, he basically gets a year of development, but I think that's really the benefit for taking a later round guy as well. I mean, a smaller school guy, Spencer Brown, maybe is the poster child for this of Buffalo, who is, I think, a fifth round pick. I might be wrong about that.
I think so, Ken.
You can. But anyway, he's just now getting to his second contract. He's going to be a very wealthy man. He's a guy who you're probably going to need a year to get a guy like that ready. And that's okay if you have Ronnie Stanley and Rosengarten playing those two tackle spots. And even if they miss a couple games between them, it's still okay. You know, if you get that guy some live fire snaps, that's fine. Even if he's not good his first year. And you look at at most offensive linemen are not good their first year in the NFL. Rosengarten actually quite an exception to that. And the Ravens, you know, to their credit, realized how much help he would need to kind of get through that year and gave it a lot to him in the pass blocking department. And you know, other than that, it's extremely rare to have good offensive line play in your first year. Usually it's very high pedigree offensive linemen who do it. Even Linderbaum, you know, struggled as a pass blocker his first year. did not really have a great first year in the NFL, despite the fact that PFF's combined grade looks pretty good for him. You got to really be a high pedigree player if you're going to typically do well. But the Ravens have time to develop now. I mean, the Ravens have, you know, Stanley and Rosengarten under contract for multiple years. A developmental tackle would make all kinds of sense. If they go that route, then I really want it to be a left tackle. You know, buy big for the feet, and big and long with feet. I don't want to have a lumbering right tackle type. I think you can pick those up more easily as time goes on. It literally is the difference between starting pitchers and relievers in terms of the scarcity of that quality being available.
Yeah, Ken, that's why I asked that question. I was thinking the same thing, where if I'm going to have some pretty big risk behind Stanley and behind Rosengarten, I want someone to come in there who maybe they're not going to just sit and develop for the whole year, but if I'm going to spend a high pick, that guard spot looks pretty compelling to be able to slide them into. I don't think Voorhees is the type of pick where you would prevent taking someone who you thought could be a legitimate left tackle. Sure. And I also think that while you may want Voorhees to play some, I don't mind doing a rotation, getting them used to the speed of the game, rotating them in there, letting them watch film and grow. I think some people will say, now that we signed Stanley, we don't really have a need, but I think the need is still pretty massive, because if either Roger or Ronnie go down, we have a serious hole on this team as it's currently constructed. Not that as we speak, it couldn't be being rectified, but, you know, probably not that likely given the cost of the left tackles and who's available. So I think going into the draft, you still really need to have a priority on tackle one, maybe two, especially if you think you could slide into guard. But, you know, like we talked about last week, after the starting five, which looks like it could be relatively set, right, all things considered, there really isn't much behind that on the roster. And I think the Ravens really need to focus there, because as we've seen, if you have an issue with the offensive line, it's pretty much the fastest way to derail a championship team. You can make up for a week.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly VeriScan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Pass rush or a weak secondary, you can shift coverages around, right? You can't really make up for having the offensive line just be weak and exploited.
Well, I would agree with that. And they're losing. We all assume that Ben Cleveland is not going to re-sign with the Ravens. I haven't seen him sign anywhere else or even nibbles on him. But that'll be three of their eight game day actives that they're going to be losing again this year. And that is a lot to replace, whether you're talking about depth or starters. It does happen to be one starter and two depth guys this year, as opposed to losing three starters last year. But it's still, that's a very tough hit to take. So, they'll work through it as best as they can. Let's keep moving here because we got a lot to talk about still on the free agency front for other teams. But Malik Harrison, gone to the Steelers, 2 years, $10 million. I'm very surprised by this move. I'm surprised by the dollar amount. I'm surprised the Steelers took him. I'm surprised by a lot of things. Maybe the Steelers are the Ravens Northwest at this point.
I was surprised as well. 2 for $10 seemed way too rich. I always thought Malik Harrison was potentially in that veteran benefit deal of between $2.5 and $3 million. I really didn't like how I thought he could be really exploited when he was a true inside linebacker. And then when he was playing more of like the edge, I thought that you could have players who could be better than him, who are just better size and shape and fit to be there. So I don't like it. I liked his versatility that he could play both, but I don't think he really offered that much. I'm not sure where the 2 for $10 came from. I'd say that kind of blew me out of my seat. They always had a Landon Roberts there who I thought was fairly similar, yeah. Maybe even a better player, depending on how you look at it. And so interesting that they let him go. I think he signed for less than 2 for $10
signed Malik. With Las Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah, correct. So a little strange to me. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way about, particularly about Roberts. I thought they had a better player. Now you hit on exactly the value of Harrison is that special teams edge inside linebacker, very rare to have that kind of guy. Albert McClellan for the Ravens is probably the closest comp for Harrison. And that's a really nice thing to say, by the way. I consider that a high praise. But Harrison got a deal he couldn't pass up from the Steelers. It's more money than probably he's made to date in the NFL. It might be close because as a third right now, I think this is more money in total than he'd made in all his previous seasons that he'll make in the next two. What I think the Steelers have done here, though, is assemble two not particularly good tacklers at inside linebacker. They're very fortunate to have former Raven Deshaun Elliott backing them up as their tackle caddy. But that's a couple of, I really expect the Ravens to be able to exploit the Steelers run defense even more. They look great, 299 to 29 in rushing yardage in that final in the playoff game. But you know, Patrick Queen is an awful tackler, and Harrison was not good this last year. I think if you really try and play those guys a lot at those positions, you lose out. They've let some of their good guys, Roberts and Spillane, who just got signed to a big deal, you know, both get away. It would not be the direction I'd have gone if I were the Steelers GM.
Agreed. Odd signing to me. Yeah. But if I'm Malik, Ken, I'm taking that money as much as I can after taxes. I'm letting that ride in the S&P. It's down now. So get some generational wealth for yourself, you know?
Yeah. He's a young man. So he'll have time for the S&P to recover. Because
that's right.
It took 25 years after the stock market crash of 29. To get back to the same level. Let's talk Chris Board a little bit. He's a tough loss. Now, I wasn't expecting to see him go either. Again, one where he couldn't pass up the money, but it's a bad loss. He played high leverage downs in 2024. I think there is an understanding around the league of how important it is to have linebackers who can cover. And Board gives you some of that on third down. He's a tweener between having a two down thumper and having a dime back. So you don't really want him on the field for early downs, but he was very effective and he supplanted Trenton Simpson. Now the Ravens, you know, with basically all of their linebacker depth gone other than Roquan, are really needing Simpson to step up, and they'll probably also expend draft capital to position.
I think Simpson is one of the keys for this year. I think that hopefully the new coach Santucci can really work something with him. I think he's got a decent pedigree playing at Clemson. He's been here for 2 years. He's got to know the system. You've got to be able to plug him in and get decent value for him, right? That just the Ravens run a system that is really, really well done. You've got to be able to plug in if you're Simpson. And if you are Simpson, now is the time to take what you've learned for the first few years. The playing time is there for your taking. Step up and you know, make sure you know the defense. Make sure you're not pissing the coaches off by missing simple assignments, things that you should know, and really start to provide value for the team. On the board front, really like what he provided, given his, you know, limitations that he had, and was really an all-around Raven. I think teams really want to use Ravens players to maybe try to improve the standards on the team. So, you know, I'm not surprised that someone picked off board. I'm also not surprised that they didn't go up to, you know, what he was offered. You know, there's only so much money to go around, but, you know, we need people to step up on defense. We need people to step up on special teams, and the opportunity is now. So I really hope they're putting in the offseason work, the film study to get there. And, you know, there's a big hole that boards left that I think that can be filled with some solid play. So I'm looking forward to having some of the younger players step up.
Well, that opportunity will be there. The Ravens may sign somebody too, but I think their best hope is to get there via the draft this year. So that'll be a solid way. You know who won in this deal is the dime defense in particular won because board was their solution to not have the Ravens very likely to have some sort of two down thumper or use Simpson in a role where it's emphasizes first and second down, but not third. And that means several players on the Ravens currently, and more likely other players who they don't have yet, will be emphasized. And that is additional back end safeties who allow Hamilton to move up to dime. I think both Sanusi Kane and Bo Braid could be potential winners out of this, assuming they make the team. Kane is likely to, because I think Kane steps into more of a leadership role on special teams with this loss of Board and Harrison both at once. By the way, real shock to special teams. And either one of them, they're both reasonable dime back options if you want to keep Hamilton on the back end. So a lot is still to be determined in the draft. The Ravens will draft a safety. They'll draft an inside linebacker, at least one, maybe two. And they'll probably have a UDFA in both areas that they like, that they'll have a chance to make the team. But I think those two players I would point to as the big winners from losing Chris Board.
Definitely. And I think with the fact that the Ravens have a lot of lower round draft picks, that's the area in which you can get players who do one thing well. So you might be able to find a linebacker that's a good run stuffer. You might be able to find a linebacker who's just too small, but you can find a way to get him to play pass coverage. So there's ways to utilize some of the low round picks that they have. Obviously, they're really good at scouting special teams players. We only want, you know, a very limited amount of only special teams players, but really interested to see what the Ravens do in the second half of the draft to plug in some of these holes that they have.
Okay, just got some bad news from Jeff Zrebeck. This came out just a few minutes ago, but Michael Pierce has announced his retirement. So not wholly unexpected, really looked like he was retiring. Anytime players start to look for autographs at the end of a game, they want all their teammates to autograph something in particular, as opposed to swapping one jersey with an opponent, which is a very normal thing to do. You really got to wonder. So Michael Pierce, that's really sad. This, unfortunately, is a classic old maid contract. Now, what I mean by that is they signed him for multiple years, I think for three, right? He played two, or it might have been two and he played one. Either way, they didn't get the last year of the deal, even though that year of the deal would have, you know, good option value for the Ravens. They would have been happy to have Michael Pierce back at what they're paying him right now. So very unfortunate. He won't play for anyone else. I'm sure that this retirement is legitimate, and it may be, you know, we saw him come back carrying out a large extra belly at the end of the year that did not look entirely like an NFL player.
Very sad to hear that news, Ken. Michael Pierce was one of my favorite players. I think that he brought a lot of value. I thought he was very affordable. But this draft has a lot of good defensive tackle talent. I think free agency, there's a lot of good affordable defensive tackle talent that's on the market, unlike during the COVID years where it was a bit sparse. So hopefully they can figure out a way to bring in that run stuffer that they need. You can typically get run stuffing D tackles a little bit lower in the draft to replace him, but he'll certainly be missed. I was hoping that the helmet signing was just him trying to get something for family or friends. And each day that I didn't hear about a retirement, I thought was good news.
Yes.
But obviously today is that day, right? Where you need to, you know, you're going to start hearing all this information. So very sad. I thought that at times he probably could have played safety better than some of the safeties they had back there, judging by his ball skills that he flashed in the Cleveland game. But now the Ravens have another hole on their roster. I think they need to make sure that they've got five solid defensive tackles that they're willing to go to battle with, if not maybe a sixth, figure out how to get a lot of value out of the inside pressure they can generate there, which Pierce, even at his size of, between 470 and 900 pounds, still was able to produce some pressure there. So I'm super going to miss him. I thought he was a great Raven. I just thought he had a great personality too, just seemed always happy. And I think that helps, in a high stress environment.
Well, he was beloved on the team. Urban and him had a tremendous friendship that was apparent. I think he probably had it with all of his teammates. And you saw the way they all reacted to his interception at the end of the year. If Deontay Johnson makes that interception, I don't think, maybe, but I don't think the whole rest of the team crowds him like that in the same way. It there was some of the novelty, obviously, of a big man dropping a coverage, making a pick on a poorly thrown ball, but still, doing exactly what he needed, broke on the football, secured the football, took the knee, did all the things he was supposed to do in very short order, and clinched the season as well, which didn't hurt. That was the last offensive play that the Browns ran in that game. The way his teammates crowded around him, they apparently knew that this was probably the end as well. So great career. And I'm really sad that he's leaving the Ravens a year early, because I think he still has something in the tank probably in 2025. The thing that they'll miss, and you mentioned it, is they will miss the interior pocket pushing they got from Pierce. That is very similar to what they get from Travis Jones. Absolute embarrassment of riches to have two guys on the same team who can do that. The Eagles probably have three, with Milton Williams and Carter and Davis. But if they can get a second that represents one half of a second tier pairing, I think that'd be very good. But they need another big man. They're going to need to find another real big man for that defense.
Yeah, hopefully they can get younger, Ken. I think Urban's getting very long in the tooth. Pierce is certainly getting older. So they've got the big guys in Madubuike and Jones, but now you got to figure out how you build out the rest of that room and whether or not Broderick Washington is going to be a part of that going forward. Not a big cap savings if you cut Broderick, but really it's, do you want him to be taking a roster spot is the decision there.
Right. All right. Well, let's talk about, you made a list of free agents they've been signed so far that might impact the Ravens in some way. Let's work through that.
Yeah. So tons of free agents. Obviously, we can't get to all of them. We could probably be here all day discussing it. It would be super fun to do so. But I'll just highlight a few. Number one, Javon Holland at safety had a few really good years at safety. Then last year seemed to have a down year. He signed a three-year, $45 million deal, so about 15 in total, with $30 million guaranteed with the Giants. Obviously, the Giants have a ton of cash to throw around. You can't really compete with a team like that. But very interesting how his career started off really, really good for a couple of years and really just dropped. That kind of shows you the top end of the safety market. Some other players that were highlights, Khalil Mack, his pressure was still really good last year, even though his sacks dropped. But he signed 1 year, 18 with the Chargers. Really, really good player. Happy for him that, he found a pretty good home there. But a 1 year deal, $18 million is fairly expensive for a 1 year deal, but the Chargers certainly have the room.
Let's talk about how those moves affect the Ravens for a second,
sure.
Because the Ravens are going to be buying in at the bottom of the, edge rusher, scale, as they always do. At least I presume that's the way it's going to be. They didn't get Bosa. They didn't get Mac. There really was not anybody left after the Bosa signing. There's not You know, it's a significant drop off to the remaining names that are out there. But there's still some players that are in their early 30s who could really help you as a pass rusher out there. They weren't going to get Mac. The safety market also, you mentioned briefly, I mean, there's been multiple signings at that, at safety and at DB Stevens and Trayvon Merrig has already been signed. Very sharp contrast to last season when the safety market started off weak as hell. Despite there are a lot of names, and it started off very weak at the beginning of free agency.
Yeah, and Ken, maybe this is more of a macro level comment, but with the cap going up, I mean, what, $50 million over the last 2 years, there are a lot of teams that are completely devoid of talent, and you see them just throwing these mega deals at these players that I really struggle. Yeah, which is great for us, right? I'm not complaining. I just, when, you know, I'm trying to look at everything from a value perspective, and that's where you really struggle with, man, is that really what it takes to get someone in the door?
There's a story, and I hope you have time for this, Matt, because I know you have a meeting coming up, and you're good on time? Okay, great. So I want to tell this story a little bit, and this kind of illustrates how the free agency market works in a little bit. Had a former teacher tell the story of how he went into class one day, and he convinced everybody he was going to sell the grades. And he goes, "Here's my scale. I'm going to have 4 A's. I'm going to have 8 B's. I'm going to have 10 C's, 2 D's, and 2 F's." And he went through and he sold them, starting with the A's. And the A's went maybe for $20. Some people wanted to. Maybe the last A went for a little more. Then the B's, they went for, you know, $5 to $10, and people wanted to buy them. The C's, the first ones went for not very much. The last ones went for more. And then the D's all of a sudden are back up in the $25 market because nobody wants to get an F. And that's exactly what's happening here in free agency, is that you're going through and you got teams that need to spend cash, and they have a limited amount of talent currently. And there's also, you know, three safeties out there for five positions. And there's the big one is at quarterback. There may be, you know, a sharp grade off of talent, and you have to get one of these guys if you want to compete. And a team like the Steelers has decided they're going to compete regardless of whether it's the right idea or not. So they're going to get somebody, damn it. And when you have teams that are in the fray like that, that's where markets become not rational.
Yeah. I mean, you saw Sam Darnold get from the Seahawks 3 for $100, right? So for anyone out there who's complaining about the cost of Lamar at, you know, 50, 52 and change, just know that $34 million is the Sam Darnold line. Very, very, very high. I think Fields got 2 for $40, yep, right, from the Jets. So when you look at the quarterback market, and when you actually think about value, I think Lamar, if we're just paying him for his value, was probably worth $80-85 million. Again, I haven't done a statistical analysis on it, but I think you could very simply justify that. I think Lamar makes everyone around him significantly better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's scary when you see some of these other teams are really paying to bring in just basic talent.
So maybe we talk about that for a second in terms of the quarterback market, because I think it's been one of the most interesting things to follow, is all these guys and the reduction in what people can get, and the way that's driving the fan base is nuts, who want these, you know, basically mid to low tier quarterbacks. That they're desperate to get now. You know, is Mac Jones the best option for the Steelers? Until Daniel Jones signed, a lot of people are saying maybe he's the best guy. You know, and it would not shock me, going back to the example about selling grades, that Josh Wilson might make every bit as the same dollar amount that Darnold does.
Yeah, that's very true. There's going to be a lot of desperate quarterback money thrown out there. I'm not actually quite sure what the Steelers' current strategy is, right? Like, are you waiting for the market to bottom out? And you're saying, hey guys, we're going to spend 15, maybe 18 million, and we're going to offer this to a bunch of guys, and they're going to decline, and we're just going to eventually find our option. I actually find that very interesting from a team building standpoint, if that's what you're doing. But man, you're going to put yourself in a bind. And the Steelers have a lot of premium talent, or at least they have some serious premium talent that they're going to be gone pretty soon. And I think you know, if I were them, I would probably be more aggressively pushing a rebuild at this point, just a ground up rebuild. I know that's not popular. I know it doesn't always work. Certainly worked well for the O's, but, you know, it doesn't work well for everyone. The Ravens luckily didn't have to rebuild because they had a really good 2018 draft. But if I'm the Steelers, do I try to get as much value as I can for some of the big chips that I have on my roster and really try to rebuild? It seems like they're still going for it.
Yeah, they have a forced rebuild that's coming because the Metcalf signing, which makes no freaking sense, none sense at all for a team like the Steelers, is forcing Pickens out of town. It's basically akin to having, let's say you had Isaiah Likely and you signed Mark Andrews in. Okay, you're basically signaling to the other player that they should be gone in free agency a year from now, kind of thing. Even if you really honestly want them both for this next year, if you think it might be good for that, it's a explosive situation in Pittsburgh where it wouldn't surprise me if we hear a lot of jawing from Pickens this summer about wanting to be gone, or prior to the draft even, wanting to be gone, wanting to be traded. He's not a guy to be quiet about his complaints. They're very similar receivers in terms of what they give you. Now that could make a really dangerous double. But they're both going to be, they probably will both be unhappy with their targets in Pittsburgh would be my guess. It didn't make any sense to me. And they've lost a ton of players. The guys they brought in have not been that good. So losing a Landon Roberts is a bad one. They lost Najee Harris. I don't think that's the biggest loss, but it's a loss at running back, you know, where they were a team that kind of knew what they were doing in terms of breaking tackles and wanting to have a physical run game. They lost their left tackle. They've got to replace him. Broderick Jones, who isn't very good, is going to move from right to left. I mean, there are so many problems. Cam Hayward is what, 110 years old now. So he's going to retire at some point. They've got to figure out how they do it. Now the Ravens went through that with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, where everybody in the division was saying they can't play forever. And they pretty much did. and so it's not necessarily the slow boat to hell here, but they're going to get there. And I think you've hit it on the nose that they probably got to let Hayward go. They probably got to move on from Watt as the starters to rebuilding that defense, to that team, rather.
For sure. Cleveland Browns, as you mentioned in your pod earlier this week, they're in for a world of hurt. I really don't understand that. That just seems like someone who wants to take more punishment. I was surprised. I really thought they should try to get as much value as they could from Garrett. But again, I don't even know if they could have moved on from Garrett without being in a complete cap puzzle, because they've really locked themselves in with basically every move they've made. I mean, they've put themselves into a complete straitjacket.
Yeah, and it's been very poor contract structuring that got them into the position with Garrett. They didn't leave enough carrot money in the out years for Garrett to say, "Yeah, I'm coming back. I'm a Cleveland Brown for life." And you know, if there's 22 or 25 million per year in those in base salary still left for him to earn, I think there's like 12 or 15 million. It's about what's left total for the next 2 years. He has a base salary of about $1.5 million, and this is before the re-signing. Base salary of about $1.5 million, and then he had roster bonuses that he was going to earn. That's not a formula for motivating your players to not retire. And it's also not a strategy to motivate your players to not retire, to say, go ahead and retire. And that's what basically what Browns fans wanted to do punitively to Myles Garrett. And of course they end up overpaying for the re-sign. Whoever I'm sure they talked to pretty much the whole NFL, inquired around about trading him, but I don't think there was a team that was willing to trade anything significant for Myles Garrett. I certainly don't think there's anyone willing to trade a number one for him, or I think they would have done that instead of the $40 million deal. And that's one number one, not the three number ones that people said that Myles Garrett was worth originally, including some of you Ravens fans. I mean, come on, folks. First of all, the Ravens are never going to do something like that. They're never going to trade three number one picks, but there were literally people on Twitter saying, go ahead and trade the number three. This is a defining moment for this organization, yada, yada. Would love to see Myles Garrett in a Ravens uniform, but it doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah, would agree, Ken. Would agree. Another interesting one, Dan Moore Jr. going from Pittsburgh to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. 4 years, $84 million, so 21 a year on average, $50 million guaranteed. That to me is the big number.
It's a big number.
So, you know, I think he graded out as kind of like maybe 42nd out of 81 total tackles, so kind of right in the middle there. a little up and down, but again, that includes right tackles as well. So really, really massive offer. I just don't see how paying Dan Moore 21 a year is something that's really going to drive your team forward. But again, on the flip side, you've got a young quarterback. You think he's getting hit too much and not developing because of it. Maybe that's where you start to get a little bit more desperate with the funds.
Yeah, I'm surprised by the move, and yet there's still teams out there where, you know, if there's seven teams that need five left tackles that are available, this is how this kind of crap happens. And the Ravens were very fortunate. And honestly, as much as people have disliked the Ravens' playoff failures in recent years, the one thing about that's true across the NFL is everybody wants to play for the Ravens. Everybody wants to play with Lamar Jackson. Okay, so the Ravens have their pick in a lot of ways, and they have some discounts available. Ronnie Stanley was one of them, was a good one. And DeAndre Hopkins, honestly, probably came to the Ravens cheaper. Wish they could have imposed it on Beckham, but we can't go back 2 years at this point.
Yeah, certainly can't. Morgan Moses got $8 million a year from New England. He's been falling off a bit. Love Morgan. Actually wouldn't have minded him coming to the Ravens in more of a backup role where he could maybe play right tackle and guard, maybe like 1 year, $4 million for Morgan. $8 million is clearly too rich. But again, guys, what we're trying to do is trying to show the how much the tackle market is getting paid, so that number one, you know, we can realize that Stanley deal was pretty good, all things considered. And, you know, number two, it's expensive. This cap is going up and teams just have money to throw out there. Ken, what'd you think of Jalen Moore? 2 years, $30 million. He was the backup tackle for the Niners, went to the Chiefs.
He's got 813 career snaps. That's what I think about it. I'm very surprised. It does take time sometimes for left tackles to develop. The Chiefs are very good at assessing talent. But one place where they haven't shown a proclivity for success is in the offensive tackle position specifically. The last one I think they really got right at offensive tackle was the trade for Orlando Brown. And then, of course, he became a free agent and they didn't have another option there. It's just really they've had a tough time keeping the position filled. They've obviously had a lot of injuries, and a guy I really liked in the draft last year, Kingsley Suamataia, you know, just didn't work out, which that always sets you back. And Rosengarten and he will always be linked at the hip in terms of how we look at those players. Rosengarten just outplayed him in the first year.
Yeah. Ken, do you remember the draft a couple years ago? It might've been Charles Cross, Evan Neal, and then Ike Ekwonu.
Yep.
I don't know if any of them have had that great of a career to date from what I was looking at. I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, I think Charles Cross is playing well now.
I think he's the best of the three for sure.
Okay. Let me look it up in terms of PFF and what they think about it. It's not going to give us a whole lot here, but let's see. Is there another signing that you think was a big deal for the Ravens in terms of what it meant?
I think that rounds out a lot of the signings. I mean, there were a ton of secondary type signings that I think were relevant. One that I think maybe most relevant to us, Drew Dahlman, who went from Atlanta to Chicago. He was the top-ranked center on the market. He got 3 years, 42 total. So that's 14 on average and 28 guaranteed. So he got the first 2 years guaranteed. I'm not sure if he's a complete comp for Linderbaum. He was the fourth-ranked center, according to PFF. So, you know, if you could get Linderbaum closer to that range, you know, the $14 million average, I think that's pretty solid, even if you have to add a year or two, maybe add a little bit more guaranteed money. But again, if Linderbaum, instead of being at 14, is closer to the Creed Humphrey, I think it was maybe $19 million, that's starting to get pretty rich for him, especially considering what Dahlman went for here after having such a good year.
Yeah, I think the problem with Dahlman is he hasn't been good for very long, and he didn't play that many snaps last year in total. So I don't know that it's a complete comp. Linderbaum has been played a lot more snaps career. Dahlman is probably a better pass blocker at this point, which is an unfortunate thing for Linderbaum. But it's certainly a good indication that there isn't unlimited center money where some other players out of the positions getting a lot of money. I think some of the other players, Melifano from Syracuse originally, and the Lions in the NFL got a pretty a good deal. He was one of the guys I thought could help the Ravens. Guy I'd really like to have at safety. Trevon Merrig already being signed. I don't even mind that the kind of the bigger names with Holland and Merrig and some of the others are out of the running now, because I think the Ravens' future was always at the lower end of the safety market. But I'm afraid, you know, seeing Andre Sisco also signed for pretty significant money tells me that the safety market's a lot hotter this year than it was last year when it was very dead.
Agreed, Ken.
All right, let's cut it off there. Great show. I really appreciate you filling in again for Voss, Matt. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
You can find me at KidRock20 on Twitter or Russell Street Report.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you want to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I want to hear from you. Anything, any kind of strategic thing you want to do or a second tier UFA I'm still talking about. We have had some bad luck. We had to toss some shows where the player has already been signed. Several days or a week in advance. So I don't want to go any further into the top guys who are still available. But if you have a second tier guys likely to be signed after the draft in particular, love to talk to you about them. For Matt Ruff, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. And we'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. Oh.